All right, y'all. Good evening. It's truly Dr. Bear Pierre. Welcome to another episode of the Real Doctor React series. You're truly Dr. Bear Pierre, favorite board certified internist. And today we got some sad news. And like we typically try to find the silver lining, we're going to do a little bit of education around the sad news. So unless you've been, you know, you've been off social media all day and somehow been off of TikTok all day, you might be aware that O.J. Simpson passed away earlier this morning, or at least we just found out the news. Not sure exactly what time he passed away. Looks like he was 76 years old when he passed away. And we know that he was recently diagnosed with prostate cancer within the past couple years. And per the reports, it looks like the prostate cancer eventually succumbed to him, right? And there was actually rumors that he might have been in hospice care that he refuted with this. It was a funny little video. He refuted that, you know, why would I be in hospice, as if he was completely healthy, which isn't surprising. We'll talk a little bit about that. But of course, we are going to find today to do some education, right? Because prostate cancer is, and I talk about this all the time when we talk about diseases, one of the diseases that if I catch it early, I don't have a 60% survival rate. I don't have a 70% survival rate. It's almost like a 95% five-year survival rate if I catch prostate cancer early, which is why it's so disheartening when I still, you know, see people pass away from advanced prostate cancer, because that already tells me that they caught that late. And we're going to talk a little bit about prostate cancer, of course, because this is what we do here. We're going to talk about some prostate cancer. You know, like I said, I know O.J. Simpson definitely, depending on how old you are too, right? And I found that out today, right? I'm 40 years old, I'm 41. And I realized that there are a lot of people who know some about O.J., but don't know, you know, a lot about O.J. Now, of course, obviously, you know, with the murder trial and everything else, people know that. You had a lot of football players. In fact, the way I found out is that ESPN alerted me, right? So ESPN sent the alert out like, hey, O.J. is gone. So just to give you an idea. So it's a couple of different worlds depending on the world that you're coming from. You know, and if you're on social media like I am, you had some people who were very upset, very sad about the news. And you have some people who, we'll just say we're not as upset that he passed away, right? We'll just kind of keep it there. Like I said, rest in peace. We don't want to, you know, we're not going to speak ill on the dead, right? At least I won't, right? Some people will, but at least I won't. So I think it's important, right, when we talk about just prostate cancer in general, like what's the issue? Like, what is the issue? What is the problem? Especially prostate cancer in Black men. And for those who know, if you follow me long enough, you know that whenever I talk about a disease process, I like to say, hey, you know, how is this disease process affecting the community that, you know, I'm in, aka African-American, right, Black, right, and more importantly, the community I typically take care of. And prostate cancer, like any other cancer, affects African-American men at such a significant rate. First of all, for those who may not know, prostate cancer is the second leading cause of cancer-related death in men. Number one is lung, but prostate cancer is right behind it, and then colon cancer and whatnot. So it's a significant disease process that affects men in general. Again, so that's just a Black man, just men in general. So it is a disease that we should definitely be wary of. And when we talk about prostate cancer, when we talk about signs, when we talk about symptoms, and more importantly, diagnosis and treatment, everything kind of starts with, hey, you know what? Like, I didn't know what was going on. Or more importantly, I didn't know that that was an issue. That's what typically is the sign of scenario. I've said this before, and, you know, I got to call my men out. I have to call my men out. Because of our superhero complex that we typically have, a lot of us don't go run and get our regular checkups. Like, we're not getting regular checkups unless someone is really, literally two reasons why we get checkups, men. Again, men I'm talking to, Black men included, right? But men I'm talking to. Two of the main reasons why we typically will go get ourselves checked out is, one, sexual dysfunction. If I'm having some sexual dysfunction, like my thing isn't working, all of a sudden I'm running to the doctor because I got to figure out, hey, doc, this thing ain't working. I need some help. That's number one. Number two, and I think obviously what's the most important thing, first of all, shout out to everyone joining. I appreciate you, everyone joining. Shout out to y'all. If y'all have questions, drop the questions. We will get to them. Number two is you typically have a family member who is either waiting in the car, waiting in the lobby, or waiting in the room saying, you better go get checked. Right? So if it's not sexual dysfunction, it's you have a family member, a loved one, who is saying, hey, you ain't been to the doctor in X amount of years. You are getting checked today. And they usually have to threaten them and say, hey, if you don't tell doctor everything, if you don't tell Dr. Pierre everything, I'm going to tell him. Right? And that's usually the scenario that comes about. And obviously, I don't want that, right? I want when you're going to get your checkup is because you know, hey, you know, it's been 3 months, it's been 6 months, it's been a year. Let me go get my checkup. Let me go get my labs done. Let me go make sure everything is working like it needs to be working. Because we run into this scenario, and I run into it quite often, where they come into the office, they have some issues that they didn't realize was a thing, right? Like, hey, doc, you know what? At nighttime, I'm urinating more. You know, I go to the bathroom. I think I'm done. I go back to bed. I got to go right back to the bathroom 2 to 3 minutes later, right? So they start having changes in the way they, you know, their bodily function when they're urinating. They start having these changes. Or they start having sexual related dysfunction changes, right? Which again, could be a precursor. And they go and they kind of stumble upon it. Say, hey, doc, you know, while I'm here, let me just go get everything checked, right? That's typically how it goes. While I'm here, let me just make sure everything is looking good. So you have these signs and symptoms where you're having a change in your urinary status. And I know it. We're going to talk about it. Like, we have to talk about it. We have to talk about this elephant in the room. And unfortunately, because of how historically we would talk about prostate cancer, more importantly, how we would diagnose prostate cancer, I think that keeps a lot of y'all out of the doctor's office in general, right? Because you'd be surprised how many people will come to me and be like, doc, I don't want to get my prostate checked, right? Right. I don't want to get my prostate checked, right? So for men, right, for a lot of men, I'm not saying all, we're not saying all here, but for a lot of men, that fear of having someone stick their finger up your butt to check your prostate has y'all just avoiding the doctor offices left and right. Just left and right, just avoiding us, right? And we know it, right? Because, you know, when we talk about, you know, colon cancer screening, y'all do the same thing. But it has y'all running away from us because y'all know on TV that the doctor, you know, puts a glove on and he says, all right, bend over. Like, that's the picture for a lot of men. A lot of men who, again, right, again, I don't want to call y'all out, but like, it's the reason why I think a lot of y'all be scared to get your checkups anyway, because for some reason, you guys think every checkup is going to end up in someone doing a prostate exam on you. I think, and again, it's weird. It's weird that y'all have that. Again, I think when you have a level of pride and you put your pride in front of your health, that's a problem. That is a problem. Again, not all men, right? Because I see someone's comment. Yeah, definitely not all men. But a lot of them will avoid it because of that simple fact, right? So we have O.J. Simpson. He dies from prostate cancer. Again, recently diagnosed about within the past 3 years. And we know, right, and then we're going to give some facts. We're going to give some facts and figures, right? And then we'll get to kind of the symptoms and the testing and everything around. So, like, I just want you to think about some of these numbers. Every 13 minutes, a black man is diagnosed with prostate cancer. Every 13 minutes. That is how, again, the second leading cause of death is also one of the most common, one of the most commonly diagnosed cancers in general. Every day, nearly 17 men die from, black men die from cancer. 1 in 6 men will be diagnosed in their lifetime. 1 in 6. So fellas, if you have 6 friends, one of y'all will be diagnosed with prostate cancer before it's all said and done. That is how common prostate cancer is. 33% of black men 50 and older had a PSA test done in 2018. Only a third of people had a prostate cancer test that should have had it. Only a third. That's a problem. Black men are 1.7 times more likely to diagnose with prostate cancer, 2 times more likely to die, right? And that kind of plays into the fact that when we are diagnosed later, guess what happens? Our treatment options decrease. And if our treatment options decrease, guess what also increases? The likelihood that we're going to die. So the likelihood that we're going to die shoots up through the roof, right? Oh, sorry. What is this? I'm waiting. Okay. No. So again, I look very calm. He said, I'm white, I'm okay. No, you're not okay, right? Again, the second leading cause of cancer-related death in men in general is due to the prostate. Second leading cause, y'all. So this is not, this again, prostate cancer is not a cancer that discriminates, but it is a cancer that will, especially for my black men, will put you at a much risk harm for lots of different reasons. You get diagnosed later, you have less treatment options. When it comes to therapies, especially when we talk about clinical trials, we're barely in them, right? So we have a lot of factors stacked against us when we talk about prostate cancer. So when we're in, now, so we're going to rewind. When we're back in the doctor's office and we're telling our doctor, hey, I have these urinary symptoms, or even better, I don't have any symptoms, but the doctor goes to check. Some people put it in the comments. Yes, one thing we would be doing is we'll be checking a PSA test. Why do we check a PSA test? We know that there is a certain range that your body's supposed to be producing prostate specific antigen. That is what PSA stands for. But what happens, right, when you have an enlargement of your prostate, especially due to cancer-related hormones, guess what? That PSA test rises. And normal is up to about 3, 3.5, 4. Anything above that, we start worrying. Anything above that, we start having to refer out. Anything above that, like if, and again, this is a PSA, this is a blood test, y'all. So this isn't even the digital test that you guys are used to seeing on TV. This is a blood test. This is a random blood test. Hey, boom, here you go. Let me just check to see how the prostate is going. The same way I check to see, all right, let me see how my blood sugars are. Let me see how my kidney function is. The same test. So like, in, especially in this day and age, the likelihood that you're going to find one of your primary care physicians who goes straight to doing that, you know, the finger tests, right, which a lot of men are scared of, right, is very low. Why? Because we already have studies that show that me doing the blood test is going to be likely more accurate in a final diagnosis of possible cancer than me sticking my finger up your butt. So, guys, we're not even worried about sticking our fingers up the butt no more unless we have to. Unless a test comes back and then we got to do it and then I got to send you to my specialist, my urology specialist. They're sticking the finger up, I can tell you that. But I can tell you they're much more advanced at what they're doing, right? So, and it's not that the general internist, family med person couldn't do it, but we don't have to do it as often, guess what, right? Because we're just going to do that blood test. If that test is high, guess what? I'm sending you to my urology friends and let the experts do it, right? So it's a simple PSA blood test just to see, hey, you know what? Is there something wrong with the prostate? So again, when you think about the fact that it's still the second leading cause of death, and all I needed to do was do a blood test, that already tells you a couple things are happening. We're not getting enough men in the office. And when we get them to the office, not enough of them are actually doing the testing needed, because we should be able to slow some of this stuff down. Right? Let me look at some questions here. I saw some good questions. Someone asked for signs and symptoms, right? So again, when we talk about signs and symptoms, especially associated with prostate cancer, here are a couple. The first one is you have a change in your urinary habits, it's particularly at night, but during the day as well too. But most of the time, because we're ripping and running during the day, we don't even notice it, right? Which is odd, right? We don't even notice that, hey, you know, I just went to the bathroom like 30 minutes ago. Why do I gotta keep going again? All right, whatever. I'm drinking too much coffee. It was what I ate at lunch. So we kind of brush it by. But at nighttime, when it's like I'm going to bed, but I can't even get a full night's sleep because every couple of hours I gotta go to the bathroom, I gotta urinate, and I thought I was done, but I get back to bed and like, oh, you know what, I'm not done yet. You start having these change in symptoms, then you say, oh, you know what, something's an issue. Or more importantly, right, or another aspect, especially because of the prostate and its location, you start noticing a change in your stream. So the stream that used to be normal is a little bit harder to go, right? All of a sudden, there's like a restriction, right, to go before it actually goes, right? You having some pain with urination. Sometimes you can have some blood with urination as well, right? Typically more aligned with bladder related cancer, but you can have some, especially depending on the severity of it. So the reason why I say that is that these aren't sneaky symptoms. It's just that men, right? Us, right? We are sometimes such in denial that you know, something is wrong, that we'll just totally brush it all off. And again, it's usually that family member that says, hey, that's not normal. Go see Dr. Pierre, right? Go see a doctor. Stop playing games. That is not normal. You're not going to play it off. You're not going to say, oh, it'll get better. So we'll let symptoms like this kind of brush off, and they're like, oh, that's not a thing. Let's keep that moving, right? So those are the typical signs and symptoms that something needs to get checked out. And like I said, the first test does not have to be a digital rectal exam, which, again, I know a lot of men fear, right? You can just do a straight blood test, and that will give us an idea to say, hey, is this something I need to pursue more? Hey, you know what? That PSA is a little bit high. Let me go check this out, right? Or let's say the PSA is on the high normal side, but you're still having symptoms. I still may want to do some investigation, right? Because again, I don't want to 100% rely on this blood test, but I can tell you if the blood test is negative, it is a good predictive factor to say, yeah, he probably doesn't have cancer. Now, he may have an enlarged prostate. He may have some things going on, but it's a good factor to say, you know what? It's probably not cancer. But if that PSA is high, you want to make sure it's not due to like some severe infections, trauma. You can, depending on when you do this blood test, because typically we will tell patients, hey, try to refrain from having sex when you go get this blood test, right? Because the act of sex, ejaculation, can cause an elevation and rise. But again, it may go from normal to a little bit above normal. It shouldn't go from normal to a PSA of 20. Right. So again, just so we're aware, like, you're not having a PSA 20 because you just had sex right before you did a blood test. Right. That's not going to happen. Right. So it is one of those things where we have to kind of, you know, we had to kind of measure and figure out, all right, what is the more likely scenario behind it? But that was definitely a very good question. Let's see. Let's make sure we. Some said it's a little odd, prostate gonorrhea pretty easy to control. Yeah, no, the problem is, right, and this, I think it's a very good question, right, because of the survival rate of prostate cancer, that's what makes it so disheartening. It makes it so disheartening because you know that 95% of people have a five-year survival rate. It's a 95% survival rate within 5 years if I catch it early. 95%. Right. And again, he said he got diagnosed around COVID time. He didn't make 5 years, which already tells me that one, when he got diagnosed, it was not caught early. And we know that if it's not caught early, that means it's advanced. If it's advanced, that means less treatment options. If there's less treatment options, your risk of death goes up. But that is a very good question, because like prostate cancer, like colon cancer, is one of those are the types of cancers that you hate to hear about. One, because they can spread, right? It's not like it's a local cancer. Like typically, when we think about cancers, we wonder if it's like homogenous spread, like spread through the bloodstream. Prostate cancer loves to go to the bone, right? So a lot of times, one of the complaints that we get, especially for men come to the office, is, doc, I'm having a lot of back pain. Right? I don't know why, I'm just having a lot of back pain. I didn't do nothing. I didn't fall. I didn't injure myself, but I'm having a lot of back pain. That already, especially if you're older, right? And I know you haven't seen a doctor in a while, I get concerned, right? So back pain is definitely a symptom that we want to say, hey, let me not brush this off, right? Let me just make sure, that's the issue right there. So definitely a very good question. Yeah, so, and then Selena says, how'd he get so sick? So I think, again, obviously we're speculating, but I think the reason why OJ got sick so quickly is they probably caught it very late. And by very late, it was probably stage 3, stage 4. And we know, because of the risk factors associated with prostate cancer, of course, race is a big one. Genetics, like family history, is a big one. And because if you're a smoker, alcoholic, any chemical related issues, like there's some medications that can add to it as well, to add to the fire of it. So we're not sure as far as his risk factors, but he had, being a black male is enough to say, all right, you're probably going to have a higher risk of having a more advanced stage cancer. So we just have to assume that because he was black, and who knows how often he was getting checked up, that was what likely cause him to succumb to his disease. And I think they said he was on treatment. He did get, and there's a couple treatment options but it all depends on when you catch it. It all depends on when you catch it. So if I'm talking about prostate cancer, I catch it early. Guess what? I may be able to do some chemotherapy. Good to go. Right. Depending on how late I catch it, I may have to be able to just take the prostate out. Like, hey, you know what? We're not even going to mess with this. We caught this thing early enough so it hasn't spread anywhere. Prostate gone. So we may just snatch the prostate right up out of there. Right. Because, again, we have the offending agent. It hasn't spread anywhere. We're going to take the whole prostate gone. Now, of course, you're going to have issues with urination, sexual dysfunction, and amongst a host of other things, which, when you're discussing with the patient, may cause you to kind of err on one treatment option versus the other, right? Like, let's say I catch it early. Let's say you're 35 years old, but if I take your prostate, you may have some sexual dysfunction related issues. You may not want me to take your prostate, even though that's the safest way. You may say, hey, doc, nah, let's do a little chemo. I gotta still have sex. I don't want to have erectile dysfunction. I don't want to have all these things that may occur because I get my prostate taken out. So the treatment options do depend on how early they catch it, the severity of it, like whether it's spread one way or the other, and then two, kind of the patient, right? The patient will always dictate the treatment options, but you know there's radiation beads that occur. I was talking to Dr. Richard, who we actually just did a podcast episode, actually dropped this week. And we were just talking about some nanotechnology related treatment options in the form of cancer, and prostate cancer was definitely one of those ones we talked about. So yeah, family history is definitely, a key factor there. Daryl Jones says, I had a PSA that went from 2.9 to 7.34. I had to have MRI. Yeah. So once you have an elevation, a change like that, the amount of scans, whether it be physical scans, whether it be imaging scans that are going to occur, because again, obviously I don't want to be talking about taking your prostate out. Right. But the reason why your PSA is enlarged, because maybe you have a nodule or maybe it's just enlarged. Like, so we, of course, we want to make sure that the diagnosis is the diagnosis. Right. So we're very careful in that process of doing it. But again, imaging tests, CAT scans, MRIs, digital biopsies. There's a host of imaging studies that you can do when you're in that diagnosing stage, because once you get the diagnosis, then you know it's kind of go time. Right. And you have to act quick, because again, if you don't act quick, because of the way prostate cancer spreads, all of a sudden what used to just remain in the prostate is now in the bloodstream. If it's in the bloodstream, now it's on your bladder, now it's on your back, now it's it spreads very quickly. We've had patients who have been diagnosed with lung nodules, and when we do the tissue biopsy on the lung nodule, it comes back as prostate cancer. So this is not a cancer that it lives local and stays local. This is definitely not a cancer for sure in that regard. So, and that's why it's so important to make sure your family history is on point. Make sure you're getting your regular checkups. Make sure if you have a change in your symptoms, you are actually going to follow up, because like that, just like prostate cancer, just like colon cancer, you let it, you play with it for a year or two, and then all of a sudden your treatment options like go down to the pits. Let's share some very good questions here. So someone said, how old should I be to get tested, right? Very good question. So with no family history whatsoever, no history of urinary issues, change in urination, the age is 40 years old. At the age of 40, once you're 40, you should be getting, with your regular checkups, you should be getting a PSA test done. Now, if you have family history, right, if you have signs, symptoms, or concerns, obviously we move that up, right? We, like 35, like we will move it up depending on family history is such a big thing. And that's why I stress genetics, knowing, you know, what grandpa, grandma, mom, like you got to know your family history. Because if you don't know your family history, then I may say, oh, you know what? Everything's good. We'll just wait till 40. But you might have had a grandfather, you might have had a great uncle, right, who got diagnosed at 39, right? That moves everything. Like your whole, when we're talking about colon cancer, probably like everything moves up once a family member gets it at an age earlier than the typical age. Everything moves up. So No family history, no signs and symptoms whatsoever. The age of 40 is typically when you're getting the blood test. Your routine checkup, your doctor's adding that PSA in there. It's like I said, it's because it's a blood test, right? It's not nothing extra you have to do. Hey, while you're checking for your kidney function, hey, check my PSA too, right? You can tell your doctor, hey, check my PSA. Reason why we do 40 is because the guidelines say we can do 40, and typically your insurance won't charge you extra for checking it early. But if you have family history, then we can kind of slide. You know, insurance kind of runs those things when it comes to the treatment option. Let's see here. Increased estrogen levels. And this is important, right? Especially for, I know I have some bodybuilders who will take hormones to bulk up and everything else. Because most cancers have some hormonal component on it, you best believe that if you have high levels of estrogen and things like that, and for those who know, that definitely bulks you up crazy, having high levels of estrogen or testosterone or whatnot, it can put you at an increased risk for getting these types of cancers, especially the hormone-related cancers like lung, like breast, like prostate. Those ones that are very hormone-sensitive, increased levels, especially if you take exogenous hormones, aka estrogen, testosterone, and those things of the like, are concerned, which is why typically before your doctor is putting you on testosterone supplementation for those guys who have low testosterone levels, they're checking your PSA. They're like, oh, let me just PSA at this level before I started this treatment was blank. That's going to happen. Like they're definitely not going to allow you to start treatment with testosterone supplementation without knowing what your baseline PSA is. So you can't get them in trouble. Whatever, guys. Let's see here. So someone said my husband PSA 6.7. Yeah. So typically happens, the general standard, right? Once it's above 4, we start checking to make sure there's nothing else going on. Now, as you get older, can your PSA kind of go older with you? Like if I check, you know, my 50, 60, 70-year-olds, can my PSA kind of trend a little bit higher and not be cancer? Yes. But you best believe we want to make sure that we have an answer to why your PSA is high before we just kind of brush it off. Like before I can just say, oh, 6.7, oh, that's cool. Like we're going to keep an eye on that. And if you have an elevated PSA, what are we also going to do? We're going to check you even more frequently. So instead of me checking once a year with your 6.7, I might check you every 4 months. Every 4 months, like, all right, what's the PSA this? Okay, 6.7. All right, 6.7. What is the next year? Oh, 6.7. Once we have a baseline that, oh, this person's base, because if it's cancer, it goes 6.7, it goes 9, 20, it just keeps going up. It does not remain stable most of the time. I don't want to say more. Let me preface myself because I don't want no one to be like, oh, you told me if it stays stable, like, I'm going to worry about it. No. Right, it's most of the time, if you have cancer and you pop that an initial one is 6.7, it just keeps rising. It doesn't just stay at that level. So that's why typically, especially depending on age and symptoms, your doctors will check, get a baseline, do the workup, make sure, all right, nothing prostate cancer, but they'll keep on checking. They'll keep on checking. Because especially when we start talking about the treatment options, what do you think we do when we're treating you for prostate cancer? We're also measuring your PSA. Because we want to make sure that number goes down, right? We want to make sure that, like, all right, the PSA was 100, right? I'm starting chemotherapy. I'm starting radiation therapy. Let me make sure that this number goes down. And if it starts trending back up again, oh, let me make sure nothing else popped. So it's one of those things where the PSA becomes an important marker for measurement and just continuation of treatment. So we want to know, like, where you at, where you live at, and that's why it's so important. That's why it's important to get these regular checkups. Because if you're getting your regular checkups, then you know the 6.7 in January and the 6.7 in April and then the 6.7 in August and the 6.7 in December. If that remains the same, you can take a little bit, you know, little breath. Like, okay, all right, this I might just live a little higher, right? But if it was 1.5, 6.7, 10, I got to do something. Let me go make sure that this isn't a problem that it could be. But that's a very good question. Natural woman says, is there a cure for prostate? So we do have options, right? If you have prostate cancer, depending on when, and it, just asking about the cure for prostate cancer, there's several different options for it. You can take the prostate out. You can do chemotherapy. You can do radiation therapy. There's radiation beads that can occur. So we have a couple of different options for the prostate. It's just a matter of we factor in how old is this person that I'm about to work on, right? Can they afford me taking their whole prostate out? Can they tolerate chemotherapy? Can they tolerate radiation therapy? How significant is this? Has it spread? Like, is it just a prostate, or is it a prostate down to the bone? Is it a prostate to the lungs? Or is it a prostate to the brain? Like, it becomes an issue once it starts spreading. Once it becomes advanced, that's when the issues kind of arise. And with any type of cancer, sometimes just the illness of the treatment, like, because again, radiation can get, you're not going to feel great after radiation. Chemotherapy, you're not going to feel great after chemotherapy. So a lot of times, some people can't even tolerate the treatment aspect of it. Again, I don't know where OJ was, right, in his school of thought, but I have to assume, because he said he was diagnosed around COVID time. It's less than 5 years. So I have to assume that they caught it late. They caught it in advance. It was probably spread places. So they had to do some chemotherapy, because if it's just radiation therapy is more local. But if I have to do chemotherapy, that means it spread places, right? Just for the layman. It's like, if I'm doing chemo, that means I'm trying to get into different areas because I can't just look at one spot. But if I do radiation, it's because I can, that's one spot right there is at. Let me go put the radiation bead right there, and then hopefully that treats it. And of course, obviously, the side effects of dealing with treatment, you can have some sexual dysfunction. In fact, you typically will have some sexual dysfunction associated with it. I've had patients who've been treated for a prostate cancer at a young age, and they've had penile implants because of the severe erectile dysfunction. They're on continuous hormone replacement therapy because of erectile dysfunction. So, it doesn't come with its risk factors. But again, if you want to be alive, right, you gotta say this is what you gotta do from that standpoint there. But very, very, very good question. I think this is a good point, right? So when someone said my husband was diagnosed prostate cancer at age of 40, right? So again, typically at the age of 40 is when we start screening. But if I'm a physician and I hear, all right, he's diagnosed at age of 40, any sons, nephews behind him, I gotta start looking at the age of 35. Right, because we know how significant genetics play a factor. So I hope your husband's doing well. I hope your husband's doing well. But it's just one of those things where it becomes an issue because of the type of cancer you can have. Can be one of those ones that's benign, slow growing, or it can be one of those prostate cancers that fast growing that spreads quickly. So we have to kind of be aggressive because we never know which type of cancer you're about to have. So we have to treat accordingly, which is why, again, symptoms, screenings early is usually the first step because we never know what our next step is in the treatment option. So I do hope your husband is doing well. Let's see here. Is it possible to have a high PSA and I have cancer? Yes. So you can have an enlarged prostate, which causes your PSA to rise, right? A lot of people know this as more like BPH. So you can have an enlarged prostate and have an elevated PSA. Now, of course, like I said, we're going to still do the test to make sure you don't have prostate cancer, but you can. You can have, there's some hormones. If you're taking exogenous hormones, that can affect your PSA. You can have this trauma that can cause it. If you, any recent sexual intercourse prior to you doing your blood test can cause an elevated number in your PSA, right? So there's a few things that can cause your PSA to be elevated, but we always do what we do. We rule out the big thing first. We rule out the big C word, right? And once the C word is ruled out, then we say, okay, it's these other things. But you always want to rule out the C word. You always want to rule out cancer, right? And the reason why I say C word, because what happens, especially in a outpatient setting or even in an inpatient setting, because I've had to unfortunately diagnose patients or tell patients, hey, you have cancer, is that typically once I say that word, you usually don't hear nothing else I say afterwards, right? So if I say you have prostate cancer, I can give you a long diatribe on prostate cancer sign. Like, it don't matter. All you heard was I have prostate cancer. You're not hearing nothing else, right? So typically we say the C word because it doesn't stop people from listening. We had someone say, I got my tested at 35 and then get 45. Yeah. So yeah, depending on family history, we will check earlier. We will check earlier for sure. Let's see. Very good question. So someone says, thank you for clarification. I don't know why it says 50. So what typically happens, and this is a very good point, right? Because we have certain guidelines, especially from a cancer-related standpoint. But then there are guidelines that may be, you know, Medicare-related, right, insurance-related. And then there's like urology cancer, cancer site, and there's another one. So it's not surprising where we will kind of disagree with the age we should be checking people. Not surprising at all, right? Because some people will be like, oh man, 40 is too young. Let's check at 45, right? You may see some places that say 45. Some people say, nah, check at 50, right? And a lot of it is, hey, they're trying to increase the amount of people that if I say that's positive, that it happens to be positive. Because if I move the age lower, what typically happens is I may have what we call more false negatives. So more people who have an elevated PSA but don't necessarily have prostate cancer. Like I may catch more of these. What I always say, especially, you know, if my loved one, right, if all you had to do was do a blood test 5 years prior, go ahead and do the blood test. Please go ahead and do the blood test. Like, let's stop playing games here. So, yeah, and someone asked a good question. Will insurance cover this? Yes. So typically your insurance will cover the screen because it's just a screening PSA test. And that's why I always say when you're getting your wellness exams, it's usually one of the tests, right? The same way they check to make sure your kidney function is normal, your liver function is normal, your blood sugars are fine. It's in that same ilk. So it's usually just, we just tagging on as a blood test for it. Extremely important for sure. Let me see. I'm about to read, to write at my husband's doctor's office. Yeah. Let's see here. So Mary says my husband was diagnosed with stage 4 prostate cancer last fall. Scans show lesion smaller. So yeah, so like I said, we're gonna send prayers and thoughts and prayers because again, it is one of those things where when we talk about the stages tells us, right, how, if it's local, if it's advanced, if it's spread, and it changes how often we start monitoring, how we're monitoring, whether some people mentioned earlier MRIs, CAT scans, blood tests. So a lot of things change once we have kind of a staging process for it. So that's why it's so important to do the first thing, right? You can't even do your screenings and everything else until you start getting checked. So that's why, again, obviously, like I said, you know, rest in peace, O.J. Simpson. But again, this is one of those things where like, all right, guys, we got to talk about prostate cancer. Because again, it's still and continues to still be the second leading cause of death in men. Black men, worse, right? We read some of these numbers earlier, right? It's again, 1.7 times more likely to be diagnosed if you're black, 2 times more likely to die just being black, right? So prostate cancer is a problem for all men, but definitely the black men. Definitely black men. Because trust me, when I was 4, in fact, I was trying to get my PSA checked at 35. I'm a little paranoid. I said, hey, I don't got no symptoms. Can I get this 30? Like, nah, Dr. Pierre, you got to wait. I'm like, all right, cool. That's cool. 40, we're good. So it's something I definitely kind of keep an eye on for sure. Now, let's see here. And this is a good question. So Sarah says, husband is, I think it's, I'm not sure, is taking Lupron every 3 months. It makes him so sick. Yeah, and this is one of the drawbacks of treatment. One of the drawbacks of treatment is that it's not like it's, you know, like taking a gummy bear and you know, keeping moving. A lot of times the treatment aspect of the cancer can make you ill as well, can make you feel sick as well. So I'll have a lot of patients just depending on the stage that they're in that they'll be like, doc, you know what? I'm cool on that. I don't want to have to go through the process of treating this cancer. If that means I'm going to be sick all the time, if that means I can't spend time with my family, if I'm going to be in a hospital, like they'll make these decisions. And as an internist, these are questions that we have to answer all the time. Well, they'll say, hey, doc, all right, if I get treatment, if I go through this process, like how much more time do I have? That's usually anytime you have cancer, usually the question is how much more time is this buying me? And then what does it look like with the time I bought? Like, did I buy myself time, but I can spend time with my family? I'm not sick all the time. Or am I buying myself time, but maybe I'm adding an extra year, but like I'm sick all the time. So it is, these are the tough questions that you have to be able to answer when you're talking with your patients, especially as you're kind of going through the treatment options. And like I said, our hematology, oncology friends do a great job at, you know, trying to find the least either invasive or the least chemotherapy or radiation therapy that's going to, you know, not cause you, all right, to have such a poor quality of life that you're like, all right, man, this prostate, because prostate cancer, again, can be a very slowly progressive disease, but it can also be a very fast advancing progressive disease as well too, right? So a lot of times it doesn't matter, like, all right, which one is which from that standpoint here. Someone asked, is it because risk is higher or because black men are ignored from doctors? Good question. Very good question. So this is kind of a couple parts, right? So what typically happens is because of the genetic factor associated with prostate cancer, and we know that the genetic factor, especially for black men, will have an increased risk of dealing with more advanced related prostate cancers. So we're already set up for almost, not for failure, but we're already set up for problems being black because our genetics make it so that the likelihood that if I get diagnosed with prostate cancer, it's going to be a more advanced cancer than everyone else, right, who's not black, right? Like, right off the bat, just because I'm black, right? And that's more genetic factors, family history factors, whether you smoke, whether you're not. But that's more the genetics play factor. So that's one thing. Now, another thing, right, is we not going to see our doctor's office at the same rate as our races, right? So as black men, we're not seeing the physicians as frequently, as early as we should, right? Which means we get caught with stuff later. And the same thing, again, I can take out the word prostate cancer, insert hypertension, take it out, insert diabetes, take it out, insert strokes, insert colon cancer, lung cancer, like whatever the disease is, because we aren't being, we aren't in the system of health, right? Because we're not seeing the doctor early enough, we're already kind of falling behind the wayside. And then we already know, unfortunately, because of the bias that's just baked within medicine, that let's say I all those hurdles I'm able to climb. Like, my genetics are okay, I'm seeing the doctor frequently. Just from a medical bias, they may not even recognize and say, hey, you know what, let me make sure I'm checking the prostate, right? That may be something that, unfortunately, may also fall through the cracks as well, too. So it's definitely a few factors associated with why it affects black men so much. But probably the two biggest ones are definitely lack of access, not seeing the healthcare specialist early enough. And then because of our genetics, when we do get diagnosed with it, the one we get diagnosed with is likely to be at a more advanced stage. And because it's at a more advanced stage, guess what? That means less treatment options. And the reason why there's less treatment options is because when we do clinical trials for prostate cancer, guess how many of us are in there? Not very much, right? In fact, I pulled up one page. I think the percentage, right now, despite increased risk of developing, and this is from Sloan Kettering Cancer Society. They said, despite the increased risk of developing prostate cancer and dying from it, black men are underrepresented in clinical trials, making up only 6.7% of patients. 6.7% of patients who are in these trials are black. And we already know that all the issues that, like, so think about it. So even when you have these trials that are available out there, we're not even getting into the trial. So we're not getting into to see the doctor. We're not getting into the trials to make sure that the treatment options that are available will actually work for us more than anything else. So we kind of have to, like, all right, you know what? It worked for that other group. So we'll just have to, hopefully that it works for us, right? So very great question. Very, very, very good question from that standpoint there. Let's see. I'm not sure if OJ was getting regular checkups, but I just have to assume, right? Just have to assume that when he was diagnosed, you know, a few years ago, because he said he was diagnosed in around COVID time, that he might have had a time frame where he just didn't get caught, or he was one of the unfortunate people that may have been getting it, but may have missed it. Because what happened, and we talked about this, especially during the peak of COVID, what happened with COVID, and we're seeing, and you're going to start seeing more studies that. We saw that because of COVID, there was a gap about a year and a half where people just in general weren't getting regular checkups. So we've already seen a rise in a lot of the standard cancers that typically get screened for: colon cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer, because you had that gap with COVID for a year or two where people just weren't getting regular checkups, where their doctor's offices, went virtual or went out of business, or they were just like, you know what, I'm not getting a checkup. I ain't doing it. I ain't going to the hospital. I'm not going to the facility. So we've seen that issue as well too. So again, we don't know where OJ kind of fell, but unfortunately, You know, he did pass away. Oh, let's see. Oh, that's a good question. Someone says, I haven't been checked for PSA, but curious to know colonoscopy checks prostate. No, what typically happens with the PSA, usually you start out with the blood test because the colonoscopy is more of a visual exam. And because they go through the colon, they're not going to see anything that may be affected with the prostate. And typically my GI doctors, they're not really the best experts in terms of prostate-related issues or concern. So they're not even thinking about that. It's usually not something that even comes into the preview, but that's a very good question. But typically, PSA, your general practitioner will do it. And usually they it starts out with a blood test. And then based off the blood test, it kind of goes from there. Very good question. Someone said, my PSA jumped from 2.2 to 3.6 in a year and had stage 3B cancer, right? And I love this statement here. First of all, I hope you're doing well. The reason why I love this is that it does not have to, because I think a lot of times because people say, oh, normal is 4, right? Just having the change, just the change in the number and the rate in change is enough for me to say, all right, I need to go get checked, right? Like he went from 2.2 to 3.6. So no, he wasn't, you know, severely over the limit, but doctor recognized, hey, that's enough of a jump for me, right? And that I need to go get this checked out. Right, and he had stage 3B, right? So it is one of those things where, like, we use the PSA kind of as our, like, okay, this may be the first step, but we don't like live and die by the PSA. Of course, that's why you gotta talk to your patient. That's why you gotta make sure there's no signs and symptoms, any changes, because the PSA is just kind of that like added, like little added bonus there. Like, okay, cool, thank you for getting the PSA. But we want to make sure no signs and symptoms, no changes have occurred that might have affected it. From that standpoint here. Let's see. Very good question. This is a good point too, right? And because someone said, you know, stay away from processed sugars and foods. Now, there's always been concern about the component of kind of our dietary intake. Now, I can tell you, like, right now, you know, there's not necessary definitive studies that say, like, all right, certain foods for sure cause an increased risk in this, right? Like, of course, you hear a lot about the fatty foods, high fat foods, trans fats, everything. Like, so you have associations, like, hey, people who have an associated diet with this have an associated risk of this, but there hasn't been one that, like, boom, for sure points to that specific food. But as you guys are definitely going to see more and more articles come out that talk about how younger people are being diagnosed with cancer at an earlier age. Like, you know, the researchers are looking. They're saying, hey, all right, what's going on here? Right? Like, is it, there's got to be something. Like, what are we missing here that has all of these younger people, right? And like I said, we talk about age of 40 for PSA, age of 45 when you start checking for colon cancer, right? But all of a sudden, you start getting younger and younger people who are diagnosed, right? You're like, all right, what is going on here? And people are looking at the foods. They're saying, all right, is something happening in the foods, the chemicals, the artificial things, like, is something happening in that? Now, again, I'm not a foremost expert on that aspect there. I know there's a few creators on here who talk about that heavy, right? But again, I can't necessarily jump out there and say, oh, yeah, like, that food right there might be a problem, but the risk is there. The risk is there, right? Because, you know, if you're eating those certain types of food, you tend to be a little bit more obese, which obviously we know affects hormone levels, and maybe those hormone levels, you know, will affect hormone-related cancers like prostate, like breast, like lung, right? So there is, like, there's steps in the way of it, so we can't necessarily point to it directly, but the concern is there. So I think that's definitely a good question, for sure. Let's see. I want to make sure I don't miss anything. Like, you guys are asking some great questions. Someone said I had a PSA fire straight negative. Yeah, no. Again, a lot of times the PSA test is one of those things where we're going to check every year. If it's negative, you know, we'll just keep checking. Like, because we don't want, and obviously we'll make sure signs and symptoms are okay from that standpoint there. And we kind of talked about the symptoms, especially for prostate cancer, just enlarged prostate in general, change in urinary symptoms. Sometimes you can have some blood when you urinate. Sometimes you have difficulty urinating, like it's painful when you urinate. Like, for those, if you just Google where the prostate sits, it kind of sits as like the urethra, right? Like, you know, our tunnel to pee, right? kind of goes through it, right? So if you have an enlarged prostate, guess what? You're going to have some issues as far as the tunnel of urine going through, right? Just to give you kind of a visual, right? So if I have, let's say, a blockage at that tunnel, not only is it maybe more difficult and more painful for me to urinate, but I may be having some backflow, right? So all of a sudden, like, I'm having backflow back into the bladder, maybe some more infection, some more pain. That's why you typically will go to the bathroom more frequently, because you're not able to empty out your bladder as well as you could before, just from a visual standpoint of kind of the signs and symptoms. And that's why it's always important for my men to make sure, like, if you start noticing some change one way or the other, please get checked. We do not want y'all to succumb to that disease for sure. Let me see. How can I get my boyfriend to see a doctor, ED, for years? C-55 now. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, so this is, this is a question, right? Very good question. Very good question, right? Like, so how can I get my boyfriend to go to the doctor, right? Because I know the boyfriends, the husbands, they be avoiding us, right? Because they operate in this superhero-like state. They're like, oh, everything's cool. Nothing wrong with me. I don't feel nothing. But I always tell them, hey, like, if you, again, for your pride to get in the way of you potentially being diagnosed earlier, treated earlier, versus, you know, having to have someone take care of you at, you know, I say, hey, do you want to be in diapers, right? Do you want people to take care of you in diapers when you're 45, 50, right? I try to scare them, right? Sometimes you got to scare them. Right. And the erectile dysfunction, typically the erectile dysfunction is enough to get them to come to our office. Right. And, you know, what typically happens, they'll come in like, oh, doc, you know, I'm having some shoulder pain. They'll say some random complaint that I'm like, okay, this is weird, but okay, sure, cool. And right before they're about to leave, hey, doc, you know what, by the way, you know, while I'm here, I've been having some issues getting the man up. I've been having some issues keeping, like, they always sneak it in. It's always like a sneak, like, oh, hey, doc, you know, while I'm here, I've been having these issues. And I always tell them, like, hey, you know, if you're having erectile dysfunction issues, like, obviously I want to make sure, you know, it's a hormone issue. I want to make sure, you know, it's not because of your diet. Because my diabetic patients, a lot of men get diagnosed with diabetes because they have erectile dysfunction issues, right? Because they don't realize that diabetes is a vascular problem. They always think about sugar, but diabetes is a vascular problem, right? One of the most important vascular organs for men, right, is the penis, right? Like, a lot of blood flow goes in there. So if you have problems with blood flow going to the penis, guess what? You're going to have some erectile dysfunction issues. You're going to have problem keeping it hard, getting hard, all these things here. So I always tell them, like, hey, you know, you might have some erectile dysfunction, but let's make sure you don't have, you know, diabetes, anything. And typically your doctor will check for PSA and all that stuff kind of around it. But that's usually the case. Either you got to scare them, right? And you got to, and a lot of times you can't let them go by themselves, right? A lot of tricks that I see, you can't just say, hey, go to the doctor and then tell me what the doctor said. Nah, a lot of times y'all have to be in the waiting room and y'all say, hey, you know what? Cause you know, they get embarrassed, right? Hey, I'm not going to embarrass you and wait in the room with you. But if I don't like what that doctor said, or he don't give me, like, I'm gonna say, hey, doc, did he tell you about, right? So a lot of times you kind of have to walk with us, right? I mean, there's a reason why the studies say that men who are in relationships live longer, right? There's a reason why. It's because the person we're in a relationship is saying, get to the doctor, like, stop playing games, get to the doctor, right? And men who are single don't live as long, right? Because they don't got no one to push them and do what they got to do from that standpoint. Alex is hilarious. we won't post that, but Alex is hilarious. Let's see here. This is a good test. So someone said my PSA was low, but I have an abnormal prostate. My urologist wanted more blood work. Yeah, so you want to, we don't rely 100% on the PSA. The PSA is one of our first frontline tests, but we don't just go off that, right? And again, like I said, especially with my urology friends, they will do physical exams. They will do that, you know, glove, finger, they'll do all of that. So they'll be able to feel the prostate. They'll be able to feel it. Hey, do I see some nodules? They'll be able to put in some work from a physical exam standpoint that won't allow them to only rely on the prostate. A change in urinary dysfunction, a change in the PSA level, your primary is likely shipping you over to the urologist and letting the urologist kind of, you know, close the deal. But it is one of those things where, again, we don't, like, hang our hat on, oh, prostate normal, cool, right? We had someone said they went from 2.2 to 3.6, right? Would still be normal, right? But because of that jump, Some said, nah, I gotta do some more work. And fortunately, I was able to be diagnosed. So it's very not uncommon for your urologist to go extra further, like to do more hormone-related tests, make sure that, hey, that this that there's no other issues going on with this prostate, even when the PSA is low. Very, very good point there. Let's see. 86-year-old, let's see, 86-year-old, that would get a couple more questions. 86-year-old dad had PSA 10.9, hormone shots, went down to 0.2, diagnosed with cancer 22. Yeah, so again, and one of those things, reason why we check the PSA is because not only are we checking to see, hey, do you have prostate cancer, but when we're trying to treat the prostate cancer, we're trying to make sure that our treatment options are working, right? Because, and the best way for us to know the treatment options are working is that if your PSA was high, and then I give you the treatment options and it drops down low, all right, that means I'm doing the job that I need to do. So it's a very telling marker for that aspect, right? And I have patients who take medications like Casodex, which is a hormone therapy related medication. They take it every day. They routinely get PSA checks done every day. And obviously we're following the signs and symptoms. But it is one of those things where we do have to keep an eye on it, because let's say you're on a hormone therapy and then the number jumps back up again. Oh, why did it jump back up? We might have to do some scanning. We have to make sure that this PSA didn't jump elsewhere and go a different place. So it is important for us to keep that marker on, because we want to make sure, that's the issue. Let's see. Good question. A lot of great questions here. Tomorrow finds out his number is up and then he reaches. Yeah, so good. Frito says she is going to, her husband's getting number tomorrow, finds out if his number is up and if he needs radiation, right? So again, we are sending thoughts and prayers from this side over here to make sure hopefully that number is down. And even if that number isn't down and you gotta get radiation, making sure that he is able to tolerate that completely. Like we want to make sure, again, safety. Again, it's one of those things where, again, I want to make sure the quality of life is going to be there regardless of the decision, regardless of the treatment option. Quality of life is so important. And because I think a lot of times my hematology oncology friends get this bad rep, right? Because they're the cancer doctors. But I can assure you, no one stresses quality of life like my hemonc docs. No one stresses that, right? And that's why they're always like, all right, I got this treatment option that may do something for that cancer, but it's going to make you so sick, I don't know if you should do it, right? Maybe we should do radiation just for comfort. Like, so they stress quality of life. And that's why I like to stress quality of life when I'm talking to my patients, because they understand that it's so extremely important. Someone says, DO and MPH. So I'm a osteopathic physician, and I have a master's in public health. Thank you, Lee, for answering that question for me. Let's see here. Case style talked about how undergoing chemotherapy, again, because it is chemotherapy. And what we talked about with Dr. Richard this week, in fact, I'll post, make sure you follow me, because I'll post some clips of the episode. And what we talked about this week is that a lot of times our therapy is we're still in the work in progress of trying to get targeted therapy. Right. When we talk about chemotherapy, especially with chemotherapy, it's like, hey, it's going to attack every cell. But more importantly, obviously, it will attack the cell that has, that's producing the hormone, which typically is the prostate. But it doesn't know that the normal cell isn't causing a problem. So it's going to attack that as well, too. So we're working on, especially with, medical advances, of trying to get more and more targeted therapy so that when you do get these chemotherapies, it can only go to the target cell, which is the prostate or the colon or whatever that target cell is, and only affect those cells, but don't affect you from a systemic standpoint. But right now we're still kind of, having to, I don't want to say shotgun it, but still having to kind of hit you with the bazooka, because yes, we know the bazooka is going to go after the cancerous cells, but it also goes after the non-cancerous cells as well too. And that's typically where the illness, fatigue, and anemia, platelet count low, all of these things kind of factor in from that standpoint there. Someone said the biopsy was the worst part of having prostate cancer surgery. Yeah, the biopsy. Because again, I definitely implore people to do a quick little Google of where the prostate is to understand what would have to be done to get a biopsy. And because again, that's a very vascular area, a lot of nerves in that area. you know, you can only you know, spray that cooling freeze for so long without feeling some discomfort or pain. Very good point there. Let's see here. Please tell them the procedure to confirm diagnosis. Oh yeah, so yeah, that's a good question. So when you have let's say you have an elevated PSA, you got the elevated PSA, and you know, you go to the urologist, right? And the urologist says, hey, you know what? PSA is elevated. I did my physical exam. I feel nodules in there. The urologist is going to do a biopsy, right? Someone kind of mentioned, like we just talked about it. They're going to do a biopsy, right? Because you're going to want to have tissue diagnosis to confirm, yes, what I'm dealing with is prostate cancer and not just a benign nodule. So that's important. You got to have that tissue diagnosis. So it is a biopsy to confirm it. And then once it's confirmed, and again, and we're talking about if it's local, right? If it's local. Unfortunately, I have a lot of patients when they come to see me, doc, I have some back pain, right? Or we happen to do a chest x-ray, we see a nodule, we do that, and we test that tissue. But if it's local, and that's the only place that anything is popping up, we will do a direct biopsy for on the prostate standpoint there. Let's see. So, and it's a good question, right? We'll get a few more questions before we get up out of here. So someone says, if it caught in time, could have been cured. We know that there is from a five-year mortality rate. Five-year mortality rate, if I catch it in stage one, the five-year mortality rate is 95 to 99%. So 95 to 99% if I catch it in stage one. That number drops precipitously every time I go up a stage. And this is just kind of the five-year marker. So five-year marker mortality rate for prostate cancer, if I catch it in stage one, is like 95 to 99%, depending on where you read. So, but it drops like to like 70 to 40. Like it drops pretty quickly the higher stage I catch it in, especially from a five-year time frame of diagnosis. So, yes, if you catch it early, I don't say you're 100% cure it, but it's a very good chance that 5 years later, you'll still be around, right, to deal with the signs and symptoms. Let's see. Cologuard is for colon cancer. Cologuard is for the colon cancer. Oh, what is this? Oh, that's weird. Okay. Let's see here. So we got some. Yeah, Chadwick Boseman. He was diagnosed with colon cancer. OJ had prostate. All right. So looks like we're gonna get out of here. Let's see. Yeah. So I'm gonna get out of here. All right. Again, I appreciate everyone for joining another live session. Like I said, you know, obviously rest in peace, OJ. Right. Whatever your thoughts are on that murder acquittal, we can have could be definitely a different diagnosis, different discussion there. But again, obviously, in a time like this, prostate cancer is the topic of discussion. So if we don't get nothing today, especially for my men who, especially if you're 40 and you haven't got that PSA done, that needs to happen ASAP. Get your PSA done. But more importantly, you know, keep an eye on the signs and symptoms. Keep an eye on your regular routine, right? Your regular routine of going to the bathroom. Keep an eye on it, please. Because it's almost as important as me knowing what your PSA is. So keep an eye on that. If you have not got it checked, get it checked ASAP. Like I said, we had a lot of people who have family members with prostate cancer. We're sending our thoughts and well wishes for our recovery. If they've already passed away, again, thoughts and prayers for that as well too. Because it is one of those diseases, like I said, it's not the second leading cause of cancer-related death for out of reason, right? We've got lots of different factors here. And I think just having this discussion is so important because it's just an awareness thing, right? A lot of people are going to be aware of prostate cancer or discussing prostate cancer because OJ Simpson happened to die from it, right? And again, right, I wish it didn't take OJ Simpson dying from it for us to be talking about prostate cancer, but you know, it is what it is, right? So y'all be blessed. Make sure to like, follow. If you did not catch this episode, if you did not catch this, I will be posting this on my YouTube page tomorrow. Yeah, I'll be posting on YouTube page tomorrow. And if you're a podcast listener, it'll be on my podcast this weekend. Y'all be blessed.